Does standardized testing cause teachers to teach to the test? What's it like being a conservative teacher in the teachers union? What's it like teaching at a charter school? What challenges do teachers face near the end of a school year? Welcome to the Conservative Classroom, where we're teaching the truth and preserving our values. I'm your host, Mr. Webb, and I'm glad you're here. This podcast is a haven for conservative educators, parents, and patriots like you who believe in the importance of free speech, traditional values, and education without indoctrination. Each week, we dive into issues that are plaguing our education system and keeping you up at night. In each episode, we offer common sense ideas to improve education in our classrooms and communities. You may feel like you're the last conservative educator or parent, but I want you to know that you are not alone. By the way, if you like what you hear today, please share this podcast with a like-minded educator, parent, or patriot. Together, we can teach the truth and preserve our values. In today's episode, you'll hear a discussion with an elementary school teacher, a middle school teacher, that's me, and a high school teacher about the teachers union, charter schools, standardized testing, end of the year burnout, and more. Now let's get started. Today I'm excited to welcome two special guests to the Conservative Classroom, fellow teachers Josh Bender and Courtney McHughes. Courtney is an elementary school teacher in Georgia, and Josh is a high school teacher in Nevada. So, guys, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for having me.
I want to make sure that we hear from teachers. I love to have guest authors and that sort of thing, but I try to at least once a month, hear from teachers that have their boots on the ground, so to speak. But before we get started, can you tell us a bit about yourself, your background, what led you to become teachers and conservative teachers at that? Josh?
Sure, yeah. So originally I'm from Illinois, the suburbs of Chicago. And I didn't know I wanted to be a teacher until my senior year of high school, actually. Originally I wanted to be an actor. I was in musical theater for 7 years. Did some professional acting as well. And then I had a couple really good history teachers that really pushed me in the best possible way to be a teacher, as well as someone I looked up to a lot who was a role model for me in my life with acting as well as just life in general. She was a teacher and she said, "You should be a teacher." And so I went and did it. What pushed me to the conservative movement was 2016 election, actually. I was 15 years old when it started, which I know makes me sound incredibly young, and I am. I'm only 23. I was in high school when Donald Trump kind of jumped on the scene, and man, to a 15-year-old, he was exciting. And so I really started looking into the movement and what it meant to be a Republican and conservative, and that's when I quickly found Ben Shapiro and others, and I really started believing in it more. And I went to college in Illinois, which was not easy being a conservative on a college campus in Illinois, but I stuck to it. I joined College Republicans, Turning Point USA, met my best friend now. We helped start the Turning Point chapter together, and I'm still a conservative teacher, and I'm still a conservative, and I don't let what I'm supposed to be as a teacher, which you're supposed to be this progressive liberal, I don't become that, I stick to my guns. I let my students know that I do love America, I'm proud of America, and that I'm not going to apologize for the sins of the past when we've learned so much from them. And that's kind of my little story.
So you don't tell your students you're conservative, but you let them know you love America. That's awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Courtney, what's your background? What got you into teaching and conservatism?
Absolutely. It's actually kind of funny, Josh. We actually have a lot of similarities. So I became a teacher. Yeah. So one of the reasons I wanted to be a teacher was I had senior year. two teachers who went above and beyond the call of duty to just kind of support me through my parents' divorce. And to me, they were just so inspirational and they really cared about their students. So once I graduated high school, I decided that I wanted to be exactly like them. So I went to Young Harris College and became an elementary school teacher. And ironically, same as Josh, when Trump became kind of a big thing in college during my senior year of college, I just absolutely loved Trump. I thought he was amazing. And I kind of used to hold the secrets like Trump rally parties in my dorm room. And I feel like being a conservative teacher is more so just like who you are, like my core values align with the conservative party. So after I graduated college, I met a few people who were very heavily involved in the local GOP. And that's kind of where I got started in the conservative politics, was through them inviting me and, you know, trying to mesh both the world of politics and my passion for teaching together.
So what is it about the conservative movement that aligns with your values? And this is for you and Josh.
Sure. So I feel like a lot of the things with the conservative party really align with my core values. I mean, I believe in America being the greatest country. I believe that government should be limited. There's just so many things. I feel like the conservative movement is so much just about, like, you know, being able to be Christian, be able to have those beliefs and think that America is incredibly great and has so much potential and can offer people of all different backgrounds so many different possibilities.
I think there's a lot of liberals that don't understand our values. And I notice you didn't say racist or anything crazy like that in there. And I think that's what a lot of them think. Josh, what about your values?
Yeah, I mean, I fully believe that America is the greatest country on the face of the earth that's ever existed in the world. I think our values inscribed in the Constitution and the Declaration are ideals that we can never fully live up to. And I think that that says more about the country or about people than it does as the country. I think the idea of freedom of speech, the Second Amendment, the ability that anyone can come here and be an American and fully integrate into the system is beautiful, because I can go live in China for 20 years and I'll never fully be Chinese. But someone from China can come here and within a year be an American. And I think that's beautiful. And I think that that is one thing I really inscribe in my students too, is anyone can be an American. And by being an American, you are so blessed and so you are more privileged than most of the world. And I think that's a beautiful thing to be born here and to be, you know, people always say, you can't choose where you're born. Well, I thank God every day I'm born here and that I live here.
So switching over to talking specifically about teaching, and by the way, I love both your answers, and I loved it that it was different. Courtney, you mentioned limited government and aligning with your Christian values, and Josh mentioned freedom and freedom of speech, Second Amendment, and those sort of things. And Josh, I noticed you didn't say racist or anything like that either.
No, I believe, yeah.
So what is going on in education? Why does it seem like education is so far away from those values that you guys mentioned? Values which it seems to me every American would want.
Well, I know, I mean, so I want to say it's because the right abandoned education. You know, I think for a while, the conservative movement was in charge of education. They were the ones who were dictating the curriculum. They were dictating the classroom. And they abandoned it. And I think that that's a shame, because the minute they did is the minute all of these other activists moved in. You know, I read the book Speechless by Michael Knowles recently. I just finished it. And he talks about that and how academia was this place where you can go and share your ideas and grow as a person. But then once we started abandoning that, it's when the left flipped it and said, you know, you can only share our ideas. And they've started pushing their own agenda. I think the problem is, too, is that Republicans see it not as a winning issue. And so, I mean, they could say the niceties, the pay teachers more and, you know, lower class sizes, but they don't know what to do because many of them aren't educators or never have been. So it becomes hard for them to actually know what to do.
So I feel like the problem with education is sort of a deep conundrum, for lack of a better word. I feel like with education, so a little bit about my story is that I started off in an alternative elementary school, so I saw a lot. I've been a teacher for 6 years, and my first 3 years was at an alternative elementary school for students who had behavioral problems. And when I would go to administrators and say, hey, you know, why don't we fix X, Y, and Z? It was often kind of met with the criticism of, well, it's been that way for 30 years and it's going to continue to be that way for 30 years. And that's kind of what got me interested in the educational law and policy, because I actually just graduated in this past December with a master's degree in educational law and policy. And I feel like sometimes with teachers, there's kind of this notion that it's been that way forever and it's never going to change.
That was a master's degree. What was that in again?
Sorry, educational law and policy.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's what's wonderful.
Yeah, my podcasting brain says, hey, have her back on. That's interesting.
Oh, I love that.
I know.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, well, I mean, I know, so I'm in a more conservative area. And full disclosure, I'm actually in the union. I'm in the teaching union, and I'm a delegate and a representative. And I was persuaded to join because our local union is very conservative. We are a lot more. It's a great bunch of people. But I was recently at our state's delegate assembly, and twice they showed their PAC give a presentation. And it was educators for Biden-Harris. And then they had a keynote speaker, and it was one of the treasury secretaries of the bigger union. And he was working with the Biden administration. And I was like, well, that's cool. You know, that's a cool opportunity. Mm-hmm. He turned it into an elect Joe Biden speech. And I will say, to give credit where credit is due, Biden voters got up and said, this is ridiculous. What are you doing? Like, they were like, this is absurd. This is not what we're here for. You know, I have friends, I have colleagues who aren't Biden supporters, who are Trump supporters. If they heard this, this is absurd. I mean, this is absurd. I don't know how much of that I can share. Quite frankly, I don't care, right? Because it did happen. That was ridiculous that happened, and I was very upset. And I know I'm going to tell my union that happened, and let's see how they are. You know, let's see how they react to it. But I think there is that level of being outcast. There's that fear of being outcast of, oh, well, this is what the union thinks, and this is what the big powers that be believe. And so if I differ or sway in any way, I'm going to be outcast at the school and in education. And I think that's why people get afraid, or they silently support and silently vote for the Republicans, but just don't really talk about it. And I think that's sad to say.
Courtney, are you in the teachers union?
I'm actually now currently in the charter school section. Before I switched over I was at the alternative elementary school, yes, I was part of like a teacher liability insurance type thing. But now that I'm at my charter school, no, I'm not.
Right. Well, it's interesting, Josh, that you brought that up. So I got in the teachers union, and the first year I was in the teachers union, and kind of my backstory is I didn't start teaching until I was 40. And although I was a conservative, I didn't realize how political, you know, education was. So I got in the union. I guess I had blinders on. I didn't realize, you know, just how politicized everything was. And I was teaching in a small district that I grew up in. And so I was asked if I would be the local president. not because I'm anything special, but just because, you know, it's a small group of people, and here I was, this new blood. So they asked me, I said, sure, you know, I'll help out any way I can. And at the local level, it was very conservative-minded people. And you go up to the district level, that changed a little bit. And I'm so glad that I had that experience, because I saw some things behind the scenes, and actually went to a national convention, and it was just, it was insane. I thought, oh my gosh, what have I got myself into? Without going to the whole story, because I do, I had a whole podcast episode where I go into all that, and I don't want to bore people that have listened to that, but I saw that there was a Republican caucus on the schedule. One of the breakout sessions was Republican caucus. So I thought, oh great, you know, I can go be among my people. And out of the thousands of teachers that were there, I walk into this room that had this Republican caucus. There was about 20 of us. That was it. Out of these thousands of teachers. And I could just go on and on, but back to what you said, at the local level, it was a fairly conservative group. So I have a theory, and what you said kind of backs that up, that a lot of conservative teachers are in the union because it's not a crazy, progressive, liberal thing in their local district.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I know there was a brand new group, and it was like Republican educators, and they're trying to talk about, you know, Republicans that are pro education. But even then, I was listening to them talk, and I met some of the founders of it, and I was like, well, you know, we were talking about who we were supporting, and I was like, well, I support Ron DeSantis, and they said, him of all people? I was like, yeah. And like, he's not, you know, and they kind of chastised me. And I was like, I thought this was the point of this, was to talk about this, you know? So even then it's like, what are we doing? You know, in this group, I'm being attacked for who I thought was right. And it's like, that's not, I don't think that was correct.
Wow. One of the things that the teachers unions push is tenure. So, and that's one of the topics that's kind of been rolling around in my mind lately. Tenure is a good thing if you're a teacher. You know that, hey, if I'm here for X number of years, I get to keep my job. I'm not sure it's always the best thing for students and for education in general. What's your thoughts on that?
I feel like it's a hard line to balance. On one hand, you have great, excellent teachers who that is amazing for. And on the other hand, you have teachers who maybe shouldn't be in the profession, or, you know, maybe have just kind of lost all passion. So I feel like tenure is kind of one of those tricky gray areas.
Right. I agree with you.
I tend not to be a fan of tenure, or I say tenure needs to be reevaluated every so often. You know, I like the idea that, okay, you put in so many years, you have a tenure for 5 years, but every 5 years we got to reevaluate you, you know? Because yeah, I think we all know the horror stories, or we've seen it in our building, of the teachers who's there just for the paycheck, you know, and they're only a couple years away from retirement, and they're just like, well, I'm going to wait it out. And that's hurting the kids, where if there was a way to say, okay, you got one more year to fix this. You know, you got to be up innovating, updating. You got to constantly be keeping it fresh. Yeah, that's more work on the teacher's part for sure, but that's what the kids need. So, I mean, and at the end of the day, they're the most important thing.
Right. Yeah. And like I said, as a teacher, I see it as a good thing. But for the students and for education, you know, I'm not so sure. And some teachers get burnt out over time. They're good teachers. They get burnt out. I guess this is an argument for tenure. A good teacher that kind of gets burnt out, you know, it'd be a shame for them to lose their job to a fresh young face. But you know, we all get a little burnt out sometimes. I especially do at the end of the year. I don't know. Mm-hmm. We're approximately a month away from the end of the year, And are you guys suffering from a little burnout? Maybe it's just me.
Yeah, I mean, it's hitting hard, you know, and I teach seniors, and so they have senioritis. And so it's like the senioritis mixed with the burnout, it's a mess in that classroom at times. You know, we can get off topic. I'll be the first to admit that, but it's definitely hitting.
I would agree. I feel like end of year is hard because you have state testing coming up and you're trying to kind of cram in the last little bit of curriculum. And then once state testing's done, you're like, oh my goodness, I don't have any curriculum. And there's almost kind of a scramble and a panic. I feel like for me personally, I go through waves where I'm super excited because I can teach different things or review certain topics, and other points where it's kind of like, whew, I am ready for summer.
Right. After testing, that's that weird time that you have a couple weeks of school left, 1 or 2 weeks, whatever it is. I suppose that's different in different districts and different schools. And you've already taught your guts out. I think that's safe to put it that way. I guess as our seniors, I don't suppose seniors are tested like, I'm a middle school teacher, but I know elementary school and middle school, they're tested heavily. I'm not sure if seniors are tested quite in the way that we are.
No, they have the civics exam, which I make sure that they do weeks before the end of the school year, because that gives me the opportunity to find the ones that missed it. And also, if they did bad, they can retake it because they need to pass it. So not as heavily.
So how do you guys feel about standardized testing?
I mean, I do see it as a necessary evil. I understand there needs to be some sort of standard that we can look at as a country and as a state and say, hey, you know, this is where we're at. But I do also think it can be a really overly stressful experience for students, you know, and if we're supposed to be preparing them for real life, well, you're not going to go have to sit and take a test like that ever in your job, you know, like, or maybe once, you know, it could definitely get annoying.
Courtney, how do you feel about that?
I agree. I personally feel like state testing is something that is kind of an evil, like Josh said. I feel like we've almost kind of lost the art of teaching just because most schools are very focused on teaching to the test. And one of the things I really love about the school that I'm currently at is the fact that, like, we are very focused on the wonder of what life and curriculum has to offer and not teach to a test. And I feel like my students, just comparing where I currently am to where I used to be, you know, the whole point of learning is to learn and be able to think critically and be able to do so many different things. But yet we're focused so much on making sure that students receive the scores that they need to for state testing. And I just feel like the state testing has opened up a lot of unnecessary doors that I feel like we've lost the art of teaching because of it.
And you mentioned teaching to the test. I think that's a huge problem. As a math teacher, middle school math teacher, I know what standards I have to teach in seventh grade, for instance. I teach seventh and eighth grade. Let's just take seventh grade. I know what standards I have to teach. And I know that those students are going to be tested, and I know that next year when we get the test results, if they do poorly, you know, I take that personally.
Right.
But the flip side of that, I also know that some of the things they're learning, I'm thinking some of this they're never going to need again. And then some of the things that I know are more important, I don't get to teach. So that goes back to, you know, we've got this, so much we have to teach, we're being tested at the end of the year. So that's what we focus on.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I guess, well, both of you said testing is a necessary evil. I guess the one of the effects of that is teaching to the test.
I just feel like we're compromising students' true abilities and capabilities when we're so focused on a test. Like, to me, when I think about the core of teaching, it's more so like, can you take this skill and apply it for years on? Whereas I feel like in most modern day places, it's very much, I need you to be able to memorize and reproduce at one point in time, but what have you actually taken from it? And that's kind of my issue with state testing. I feel like we focus on the wrong things when it comes to state mandated tests. I think they're important and I think they have some value, but the way that we test and how many tests that are given, I feel like it does students wrong.
Do you have anything to add to that, Josh?
No, I mean, I overall agree. Yeah, I mean, and I think the weight they take, you know, the like, because I mean, like, so I taught AP US History for a year, and my kids did not do very good on the test. Well, it turns out the test was rewritten, and no one did good across the country that year. Like, overall, the scores were low. But I took that really personally when I saw that. But it's like, I know I did the best I could to my ability, and I know, you know, it was also them that had to put the work in, you know? And yeah, I think the weight that they put on those tests sometimes can really, it can turn a good teacher and a teacher who cares into a real negative Nancy real quick.
So we compare our scores this year, whatever the scores will be, to our scores last year and the year before. But it's a different group of students coming in and out. And I think folks that don't teach don't realize one group of students can be so different than the group you had last year. And the group you have next year can be so different. Mm-hmm. So I wish, I know testing is a necessary evil, but I wish the focus was more on, okay, so these students scored this way before they came to your school, and although they're, let's say this group of students are low performing, however, they learned a lot in your math class compared to what they knew last year. Instead of, oh, the school scores went down or the school scores went up. Obviously, part of that is teachers, but a lot of that is the group of students that you have. So you guys tell me, am I way off on that? Do you agree? What have you seen?
No, you're 100% correct.
I agree fully. And hit the nail on the hammer. Hit the, I don't know what the expression is. Sorry. Whatever it is. I mean, that's really spot on. Truly.
Yeah. I mean, I think of even how different my second period is to my third period. And that's in the same year. You know, and I can't imagine how my next year is going to be, you know, and how last year was, you know, it's every class is so different. Yeah, and I would love to be able to say, hey, look, they came to you with this, but they left with this. So clearly they learned a lot in your class. That's a better reflection of you versus, oh, overall the scores are down. Well, maybe this group just wasn't as, the fundamentals weren't there when they got to you. So you had to spend so much time backpedaling that you couldn't get to where you need to, you know, just even stuff like that.
I mean, we're able to dig into the data and look at how this group of students did. We're able to look at a particular student and see how they did last year, how they did this year. And, you know, after this year's testing, we can look and see how they did. But the way the schools are graded in, you know, in Kentucky, it's, you know, these yellow status, this school dropped to a yellow status. And okay, that school also had a different group of students coming in. So although we can look at, you know, individually or at the school level, at the teachers, the math department level, we can look at students and compare and see if this student grew from year to year, but that's not really what we're graded on, so to speak.
No, I mean, I totally agree. And it's like, I feel like some schools are trying to find a way around that, you know, like, oh, look, we're watching the student grow, but also I mean, there's just so many factors that can affect how a student does. And, you know, I know my district is, it's a very, very, very poverty stricken district. And so some of these kids might have a home and then not have a home. And like, even things like that, that does affect your scores. You know, if you don't know where your next meal is coming from, yeah, you're not worried about school, you know? And so even those are factors the state doesn't care about. They don't take that into account. They just say, oh, look, scores went down.
Right.
But these kids are people. They're humans.
And something I'm seeing is the effects of COVID. And I hate to even bring up COVID. And as teachers, we certainly can't blame everything on COVID. But as a math teacher, at the beginning of the year, it was such a struggle. And one of the special education teachers that was a co-teacher in one of my classes, I was talking to her about this. This was like a month into class or a month into the school year. I said, wow, I can't believe like how low this group seems. There's so many basic skills that it seems like they don't have and how frustrating it is that I don't have the time to go back and teach them. And without those skills, how can they build on those skills and learn this concept? And she said, well, do you realize what grade those students were in when COVID hit and schools were shut down? It's when they were supposed to be learning their multiplication facts. And like she went through two or three of the things. And I thought, oh, because I don't like to look back at COVID and blame it on that. But she had a really good point. Are you guys seeing any of that, any effects of the COVID shutdowns and the loss of learning?
I'm seeing it in a different way because I have one class of sophomores and they cannot put their phones down. I mean, they are glued to them. I mean, it is ridiculous how much they can't put their phones down for a minute, let alone, you know. I think I almost wanted to bet them like, hey, if you all can put your phones down and not touch them for the entire class period, I'll throw a party. Cause I don't think they could do it. I mean, it's sad. I mean, I'm in the same generation as them. You know, I'm a Gen Z educator, which is even weirder. I get being attached to my phone, but I also know how to disconnect and I can put it away for an hour if I need to. You know, especially to really focus on what I'm learning.
Right. Well, I just turned 50 over the summer, so I'm an old geezer. But, you know, I'm so used to my phone. You know, it takes a conscious effort to put it down sometimes. So I totally get that. What are your effects are you seeing, Courtney, of COVID?
So my current third graders, when COVID hit, they were in kindergarten. So I've seen a lot of foundational issues with reading this year where third grade at my school, it is very reading intensive. So if students don't have those foundational reading skills, they're struggling across the board because they can't keep up between word problems. Our school is very kind of big into the classical teaching style. So we read a lot of stories like Princess and the Goblin, Black Beauty, kind of harder core level texts for third graders. And it's challenging because so many of the students lack the foundation to be able to decode that they're so focused on trying to figure out what the problem or what the question is that they struggle to apply the skills that are necessary. So COVID's kind of been an interesting factor with my group this year.
So before I let it slip my mind, you've taught in public schools and you teach at a charter school now. What's the difference on the teacher side? Because that's interesting. You know, a lot of times we talk on the podcast about, you know, homeschool your kids or get them out of the public schools, take them to private school, charter school. We talk about school choice. But it's interesting to look at the teacher side. So tell me a little about that.
I love it. I love the school that I'm at. I feel like I have so much more autonomy. When I was in a traditional public school, I was a Title I teacher. So it was a lot of reading and math intervention skills. However, that required me to read from a script for almost the entire day in small groups. Whereas now, being a third grade teacher, I have a lot more freedom to teach how I want and to be able to kind of do those more kind of like art of teaching aspects. So we have a lot of Socratic questioning, Socratic discussions, you know, talk about hypotheticals and get to enjoy learning through songs and all these different components that being in the public school, I was not allowed to do because it was very much you need to read from the script word for word. And if you deviated, that was kind of seen as a big no-no.
That's interesting. So you have more freedom at your charter school than you did at the public school.
Yes.
More freedom to teach how you want to. Is that accurate?
Yes. My school is also very conservative leaning. So I think that also helps a lot because we get to talk about, you know, a lot of different things that like how great America is. We study the 13 colonies and we get to look at historical documents. And it's just creating the wonder in the classroom has been a magical experience, not only for me, but for my students.
Isn't it crazy that talking about loving America and reading historical documents is a conservative thing? And right. Not, isn't that, I mean, I don't think it was that way. I don't know, 20 years ago, but I wasn't teaching 20 years ago. So I don't know.
I was not either.
I got into teaching very late in the game. I started teaching when I was 40. So I think it has made me a better teacher because I'm not sure at 20 or 21, I'm not sure I was mature enough to to be in charge of students and to be a positive influence on them. So my hat's off to you guys for getting an earlier start than I did. What's the one thing you want the listener to remember if they don't remember anything else about this episode? Courtney, we'll start with you.
Oh, no.
That's a tough one.
That's a really tough one. I would say I would probably give a piece of encouragement that there are great conservative educators. They do exist. You're listening to three of them right now. And that, you know, I do believe that there is hope for education.
And there it is, encouragement, and there are, I say it on every episode, you are not alone. I sent out a Google form to get some feedback for the podcast, and that's one of the things that folks like is hearing from other teachers. So I appreciate you guys being on here. Josh, you had a little more time to think about it. That wasn't fair to Courtney, I suppose.
It's okay.
What's the one thing you want the listener to remember, Josh?
I mean, I kind of got to say the same thing. You're not alone. There are good teachers out there. I think my biggest thing is, and I push this every time a discussion about public education comes up, is don't abandon it. Because the minute you abandon it is the minute we give up everything. But get out there and keep fighting, because I do believe a pendulum is swinging. We're reverting back to where we should. But the minute we start to kind of loosen our grip is the minute it goes back. So we got to just help that pendulum go.
Yeah, that's great advice. As we wrap up this conversation, either one of you or both of you like to share with our listeners where they can connect with you on social media, or do you have any projects or websites, books, podcasts, anything you want to plug or promote? This is your time to do that. So Josh, we'll start with you this time.
So I gotta give my buddy's show a shout out. Originally it was our radio show, but he's continued into a podcast, Speechless with Kev Ferris. He's a really, really, really awesome conservative. My personal best friend. I've been on the show numerous times. He's really doing a great job. He's going to be a lawyer. So he's amazing. you got to check him out. You can find him on YouTube. I think Speechless Kev on Instagram. He's an amazing guy. I got to plug him more than myself, because without people like him who are on the ground sharing these stories and inspiring the young people, we got nothing. So definitely check out Speechless with Kev Ferris.
Speechless with Kev Ferris.
Yes.
And Ferris, is that,
it's a P-H-A-R-E-S.
P-H-A-R-E-S. Yeah. Send me a link to that after the show and I'll make
absolutely
sure to put that in the show notes. Is it a podcast? You said radio show. Is it a radio show that turned into a podcast?
And now he's doing stuff on social media, mainly YouTube. Mm-hmm. And then he does live streams every so often, videos. He's trying to get back into it as much as he can, but he's also, you know, busy with school and everything.
Okay. Yeah. Send me links to that. I'll make sure and put it in the show notes. And I'll definitely check that out myself too.
Yeah, you got it.
Anything else for you, Josh?
I think that is it for me.
All right. Courtney?
I don't know that I really have any sort of kind of social media, but if people want to reach out, they can find me on LinkedIn or Facebook under Courtney McHughes. And I'm working on a couple of projects, but I'm keeping them quiet for right now.
Gotcha. And if it's okay with you, I'll put a link in the show notes how they can connect with you on Facebook and LinkedIn. Make it really easy for them.
Perfect.
All right, guys. I appreciate it so much. I never know how it's going to go when I'm talking to folks that I've never talked to before. But I'm telling you, the folks in the conservative movement are just the nicest, most down-to-earth, common sense people, and you guys definitely fall into that category. I appreciate it so much. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you so much.
That's it for today's episode of The Conservative Classroom. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it and learned something. If you liked what you heard, please don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Most importantly, share this podcast with a like-minded educator, parent, or patriot. You can also connect with us on social media and share your thoughts on today's topic, give feedback on the podcast, or suggest a topic by sending me an email at theconservativeclassroom@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. If you feel that education without indoctrination and teaching the truth is important to preserve traditional values, then support my efforts to keep the conservative classroom running. I'm a full-time teacher and dad and part-time podcaster. I invest a lot of hours and my own hard-earned money each week to bring you quality content, but I need your help. Check out the links in the show notes and on the website to support the podcast with one-time or recurring monthly donations. Every little bit helps. You can also visit our merch store to get your own clothing, coffee mugs, stickers, backpacks, book bags, and more with the Conservative Classroom logo or one of our many other conservative slogans, such as age appropriate does not equal banning books, defund the teachers' unions, keep politics out of the classroom, and more. If you want to support common sense and education without pushing your politics, check out our products with the red schoolhouse logo on it. We know it's hard to be openly conservative in some school districts, but your silent show of support may help you find other conservatives in your community, and it lets you know that you're doing the right thing. Until next time, this is Mr. Webb reminding you that you are not alone. See you next time on The Conservative Classroom, teaching the truth, preserving our values.